make a particular focus on drug addiction and the people who are making some strides and having some success dealing with issues that are prevalent in the various communities. Mm-hmm. Rotary District 7930 represents 47 clubs that from Boston north to Salem, New Hampshire, and east to the communities of Cape Ann. So they're all gathered together for a dinner, but before that they have a showcase and they have tables for with vendors in different organizations that are working to help fight the war on drugs and drug addiction.
Okay, and we are looking at some of the vendors who are here right now in the video. And Josh, tell us a little bit about Rotary International and what it's doing here in terms of Dave's being here and what's going on the rest of the evening, because you also have something else going on tonight.
Rotary International is a organization of 1.3 million people worldwide. We're in 100-plus countries. It's been around since the early 1900s, and there are a number of initiatives that we're involved in. This is a community service type issue that our district has chosen to become engaged in, and the vendors here were all invited by Dave Gardner and his committee. And
okay. All right. Well, let's so introduce Dave to me, because Dave, we've talked a few times. Come on over here. I'd hang myself. We've talked a few times on Josh's show. So tell me once again about now. You're the district governor, and tell the great unwashed like myself what that means.
So the district governor is responsible for the 47 Rotary clubs that exist from West Roxbury, Rosendale, to Lexington, to Salem, New Hampshire, over to Newburyport. So it's a pretty good geographical area. We have about 1,800 members, and I'm responsible for managing the conversation, the passion that exists, and to try to encourage and inspire presidents and their members to continue to do the great things they do in the community and to tackle even bigger projects as time goes on.
One thing that I heard frequently when you talk with Josh and on Josh's program when it was the Rotary Hour is the increase in membership. And one of the things that bothers me today about politics is there seems to be less emphasis on service with our politicians in terms of representation, but a club like yours is gaining more in service, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
So basically, I think that everybody has service in their heart, and it's about finding people's passions, and passions are driven really by what they care about in the world. And so if you can isolate their passion and get them to do something within that field, they're going to be excited. And this particular story here with the World Peace and Outstanding Dinner this year, focused on addiction and recovery and prevention, is really something that's hit home in every community, and probably almost everybody in our communities have known somebody who's either suffered addiction, whether it be alcohol or drugs, and or lost somebody in their lives. And so I thought this is a right time to take a peace conversation, which I think addiction and the epidemic that it is really about peace. And I started this idea to try to bring together all of the organizations that are fighting this conversation. And they range from recovery houses to prevention techniques to coaches for loved ones who have been lost. And so it's an incredible array of organizations that are dedicated to this mission. And what was really amazing is it's not an easy thing to pull off, but as I started to request participation from the exhibitors, they actually took the bull by the horn and actually were recruiting themselves.
Okay.
As much as until recently as yesterday. Mm-hmm. And so we have 33 exhibitors that represent from Rockland, Mass., all the way up to central New Hampshire. And it's, like I said, a great gathering. We have great programs. So it's the first part is a showcase. Second part is going to be networking. So they can actually talk amongst each other. And what we've tried to do is bring into a conversation the opportunity for Rotarians to volunteer at a higher level than just base volunteers. So we're all professionals. I'm a marketing services person, so I do design, printing, direct mail, fundraising, those types of things. And there's other people who have other skills, public relations or carpentry or accounting or you name it. We have those skills. And for us to be able to volunteer those skills to these types of organizations that are on tight budgets can be overwhelmingly beneficial to them, because they can't afford to hire those people. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to create more power, more impact, more purpose. And really it's about our three basic things I think Rotary can do really well is educate, advocate, and collaborate. And education is something we've been doing for the last few years. Advocation is something we all have to do daily, weekly, monthly, annually. because we can't just advocate at election time. We have to advocate year out so that their feet are always on the fire, right? And then the next thing is collaborate. What we've done here, this is the ultimate collaboration, trying to tie Rotarians with Skills and each of the networks together. These are all pockets of networks. Like there may be some in the Merrimack Valley that don't know people in Cape Ann. When they can connect and know that they have beds available, it makes that conversation possible to handle that. And then the last thing is, you know, tonight we have a Chief Medical Officer, Barry Ginsburg, from Leahy Health, and then we have District Attorney from Middlesex County, Mary Ryan, and they're going to tie into the conversation, the overview, and everything else. And in addition to that, we have Heidi Hillman here, and she's from an organization that is working, it's Massachusetts Prevention Alliance, and she's actually working on for Rotary on a pilot global grant that's worth almost $100,000 to help clubs learn how to educate schools, children, and community adults about addiction prevention. And this is a pilot project with $100,000, which could end up being hundreds of millions. And it's possible, I'm not saying it will happen, that it might be one of the ideas of consideration for the next thing we take on after
that's,
polio.
That's what I was going to ask you. That's exactly what I was going to ask you, because that's the next big thing, I would think.
Yeah, that or clean water. Maybe we can do both. Because I think they're both critical. I believe as we start to put pressure on the pharmaceuticals, they're going to say our market's drying up in the U.S. We need to do something to expand our market, which means they're going overseas. And this problem in a third world country or in a developing country is going to be far more intense because they've dealt with pain the old-fashioned way with ice or just sustaining it. If they start being given medication, all bets are off. And I don't know whether you know this, but there's only two countries in the world that allow pharmaceutical advertising on television. That's U.S. and Australia.
Really?
And when they open that up anywhere else, you can see what happens. I mean, every third commercial on TV now seems to be a pharmaceutical commercial. And we have to find a way to change that because it's created this pretense that drugs are the solution. So I think there's plenty of good things happening. So you'll hear about some of those things tonight.
Okay.
And I think it will be a fantastic opportunity. And one of the things that happened with the Leahy grant, because Leahy gave us the $5,000 funding to help pay for the showcase and invite all of the exhibitors to come and stay for dinner as a thank you from them and from Rotary for the work they're doing in our community. So I think that's was a really great concept. And then they're going to have about $2,500 left over to do 10 $250 mini grants that will be matching funds from the clubs to do projects in this area in the next 6 months. So we're going to try to make something happen positively in that conversation.
Sounds like a big start. Yeah,
so
a really big start.
This is a big start. Yeah,
that's excellent. Well, Dave, I hope to catch up with you later on today. And nice to meet you in person.
The same here.
And congratulations on this effort.
Thank you so much, Dave.
That is Dave Gardner, who is District 7930. Josh, you said it enough. He's the district governor. Bill?
So, Rick, here's a little inside stuff. Maybe you could get that working, okay?
Yep.
That mic. And then I'm going to go over. We got a few people we can talk to here.
Okay.
And maybe hopefully we can get Dave back with us at some point a little bit later on here.
Okay, so Bill is going to go
off. And I'm ready to go. You can still hear
me
now?
Yep, okay. Yep, go ahead. So Bill is going to go.
All right, here we go.
And I'll see if I can zoom in on him.
But Heidi Heilman is with us. Heidi, how did I butcher your last name?
You did a great job. Heidi Heilman from the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance.
Tell us about the Massachusetts Prevention Alliance. What is it?
We are an all-volunteer organization that works the policy of prevention. Stakeholders from all sectors across Massachusetts to look at policy issues around drug and alcohol, regulation, control, and what's happening there. And we work to protect young people through policy. We see every child central in our drug and alcohol policies.
So in a way, would you say the last 2 years legislatively have been very successful, but yet there's much more to do? Or how would you describe that? You're not quite with me on that one, right? So there's a lot more work to do there.
There's a lot to do. I mean, right now we have a soaring opioid epidemic and crisis across the nation and across the state and across the region. And at the same time, we have this backdoor issue coming up, which is the marijuana issue. So we see an opioid epidemic, but how long will it take before we have a THC epidemic when we have high-potency THC products in every community that are accessible to children and acceptable for recreational use. So what we really want to look at is these we want to look at addiction and the products that are sold. They're commodities that have addiction potential. And our young people with their developing brains, primed for addiction, are vulnerable to that. So we have to treat those commodities very different than any other commodity on the market.
So I'm with you on that. It seems like the whole marijuana piece, we're moving the wrong way on that, in a way, obviously, to protect our young people, aren't we?
Well, and there's also what we're witnessing that people haven't put words to, or that still isn't part of the narrative, is that with these commodities and this and these selling, marketing and aggressively sell in our communities, we have this phenomenon that's called what we call regulatory capture, when these industries are self-regulating. So they get to make the rules. And that's what we've seen with, now it's all coming out with the big pharmaceutical and how some of these pharmaceutical industry folks knew about the massive supply that they were flowing into communities that didn't necessarily have the demand medically. Now we're learning about that, and they're starting to hold those industries accountable. And it's the same thing that happened with big tobacco. Tobacco, we started to hold accountable 100 years after all the pile of demise from nicotine. So now we're looking at opening a new market with marijuana. What's it going to look like in 25 years if we don't learn from our history with those addictive commodities and start to tighten up regulation and control right out of the starting gate?
Folks wanted to either get in touch with you or the organization or learn more about the organization, where would they go?
They can find us at mapreventionalliance.org, which is MA as in Massachusetts, mapreventionalliance.org.
All right, we'll hopefully try to get some links up there too at some point. Check back.
Thank you very much.
All right, Heidi, nice talking with you. We're still good here?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to try to shoot over here to the Essex County Sheriff's Office here.
Okay.
And we just did an interview. We posted an interview with the Sheriff Kevin Coppinger today, that we talked to him yesterday. And from the Sheriff's Office, they're well represented here. And you are?
Jim Petrosino.
Okay, Jim, I'm sorry. So I know you're here with Gary. And tell us about what brings you here today.
Well, we're here to be networking with all the people right here that have contacts with jobs and substance abuse programs to put our guys in. The biggest thing that we're trying to do now, when they leave, we want them to get a job that they can keep. And so one of our programs at the Lawrence Alternative Center is basically getting them a job before they leave prison, put an electronic monitor on them, have them work, earn money, go to a sober house, pay for a bed, and then eventually transition into society with a job that they can keep while they're on probation or doing anything else, so they can pay their fines that they may owe the courts. But the electronic monitoring bracelet is what we're really pushing right now.
So the statistics are staggering as to the number of inmates that have mental health issues and or substance abuse issues that bring them probably in a way to Middleton. The other piece here, though, is you mentioned Lawrence, which I think I might have been aware of, but I had forgotten about that. That's where the inmates go where they're kind of getting closer to release.
Yes.
So they're working out of that, out of the Lawrence place.
They don't go out of Middleton. That program I was talking about was all out of our PREPA center. But, Middleton House of Correction is this for inmates that aren't going to be ever eligible to come to that facility. However, we try to, the ones who are, we try to transition them in a time period that they can get something out of it. Going after for 30 to 60 days isn't going to give you much time. We have a guy for 9 months, 8 to 9 months, they can work, do their programs, get set up in society for when they leave here. So it's a great opportunity for them.
And so one of the things you're, Ryan, wanting to get the word out here is for businesses, for jobs.
For jobs. We put people in jobs, landscape companies, restaurants we're looking for now because it's getting to that time of year. Anything like that. We have people in factories working right now. We want these guys, we're not just getting them a job to have a job. We want something they can keep that makes a good salary and they can live off of it when they leave.
Gotcha. Anything else you want to share with us?
No, I just one thing that we do have in place at Middleton is the detox programs, which is we have 42 beds for males and 42 for females, and it's something that, as far as I know, is if you look countrywide, there isn't a prison that has that many detox beds available throughout the whole state. I mean, whole country, and we're very proud of that. And again, we're finding great success for the males leaving. It's an 87% completion rate on going back, getting released into the community, and the women are around 80. So it's a great program.
All I know is that I feel like I'm spending too much time with folks from the Sheriff Department here in the last 24 hours. No, I'm just kidding you. But I'm going to toe the line here and make sure. By the way, I got my stoplight, my brake light fixed like a few weeks ago, and I fixed it myself, and I've been negligent for a month or so on that piece, I guess I realized. But so I'm toeing the line here. I'm trying to toe the line. And good work. Congratulations to all the work that you guys are doing there.
It's a tribute to Sheriff Coppinger. He's really trying to focus the next 5 or 6 years, or even longer, into focusing on the reentry of people into we have tons of programming, but it's about getting them to succeed when they leave.
I think that's a message that a lot of folks don't understand, because everyone's so busy with their own lives, everything that they do. And like, you know, I'm talking with the sheriff a number of times over the years, and one of the things that just amazes me is that the more you do it, the more you realize the more you have to do to make it work.
Yeah, he's realized that from day one, coming in, that we needed more of being out in the community. We have great facility of programming, but we have to have our sheriff's department represent the 34 communities that we have out there and get out there and actually help these people and get involved, not only with helping them, but prevention in schools and making sure that these guys don't come here. So what's something we're thinking about getting back into is getting to the school system, telling these guys, you know, hey, this is where you don't want to end up. Get the help when you're offered it.
Jim, nice seeing you again, and best of luck.
Nice seeing you. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Now, here's what I'm thinking, Rick. Maybe if Josh and you guys can grab somebody over there, I can talk to at least one more person over here, and then
sure.
We'll see how it works.
Okay. All right. And again, we are at the World Peace and Understanding Showcase.
We're talking with Peabody Collaborative, Peabody Healthy Peabody Collaborative here. I'm going to get down here. There we go. Now, I want to know what you guys do, but first I want to know who you are. I think we do have some video here, but who do we have?
I'm Sarah Grinnell, and I'm Sandy Drover. I'm the Outreach Coordinator, and Sarah is our Director.
And the organization is Healthy Peabody Collaborative, so tell me about that. Who do I go to here?
The Healthy Peabody Collaborative is a City of Peabody Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition. The coalition was formed in March of 2008 with our former mayor, our health director, and our chief of police at the time. We're located in the Peabody Police Department. We work with all sectors of the community around substance abuse prevention, positive youth development. So we're trying to build kids up so they can be the best that they can be.
You have anything to add to that?
I don't think so. I think she covered it.
We're done here then. Okay. No. But so what message do you want to get out to people here right now, coming to this event?
So we work with, as I said, all sectors of the community, and we do so because we want to promote positive social norms in our community, so make Peabody the best place for kids to grow up in, so they're able to make the best choices possible for their future.
It is all about decisions, and I see this board over here. So actually, I know we can't get a clear shot of this because there's a lot of pictures, but obviously you're very active. So tell me what are we looking at here? Obviously involved with a lot of students and so on.
That display board is actually showcases our partnership with the Rotary Club in Peabody. And it's just a drop in the hat of the activities and prevention efforts that we have in the city around positive youth development. What this is, it is a fourth grade writing contest. There's 8 writing prompts that they responded to, and they all come from the Search Institute 40 Developmental Assets. And an asset is what a kid needs to be the best that they can be. And the more assets they have, the less likely they are to engage in negative and risky behaviors. So the Rotary, for us, we have 8 elementary schools. It's quite an undertaking to have all of our fourth grade students write essays around positive and healthy living. So the Rotary reads and judges all of the essays for us and picks a winner from every grade in grade 4 in Peabody. So that's what you're looking at there.
You know, you mentioned something that reminded me of something. I remember working training once when I was in education before I retired, but it was the asset model. So you guys, so I always love that because it's so simple and obvious. You have a list of assets that people can have, whether it's one parent, two parents, all kinds of different things that not just family members, but all different things in your life. Maybe you can share more about that because you've seen it more recently than I have. But the asset model, and it's so simple, but yet it's so critical.
So that's where this writing contest came from, as Sandy said, the 8 categories. And so we were, the prize for this contest is the is a bookmark, is I'm sorry, not a bookmark, Barnes & Noble gift card, and it's for reading for pleasure. So that's another example of one of the assets.
Just a bookmark. Maybe that one might not have entered.
And so the assets, it is very simple. It's sitting down with your children a couple times a week and having dinner with them. It's positive adult role models in their life. It's making good friends, being a good friend to somebody. So the more assets a young person has, the more the less likely they are to engage in risky behaviors.
Right. Anything else you guys want to share with us about the collaborative here, the Healthy Peabody Collaborative? We're good. Okay.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, Bill, thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick.
Okay. Thanks, Bill. I'm going to just swing the camera around here. Once again, we're at the DoubleTree in Danvers. Let me just push this. We're trying to do a double duty. Josh, why don't you stay here and put this mic on, and we can talk that way. I'm having a tough time with the third mic, Bill. I mean, with the fourth mic. So
as long as you got the second.
We got these. Yeah, put it on. There you go. You know how to do that. We've done this a few times before. Sit down. Relax.
Okay.
There we go. We got Josh Arnold back again here, and. Thank you, Bill. That was awesome. Good stuff. Check these mic levels here. We are at DoubleTree in Danvers. This is MSO News Sports, and we are at the Rotary-hosted, and it's their idea, right? And it's partially sponsored in part by Leahy. It's the World Peace and Understanding Showcase, the dinner later on tonight. You'll have two great speakers, I understand?
Yeah, they have a district attorney who is speaking, and I think someone from Leahy will be doing an introduction.
Dr. Ginsburg, yep.
Yeah, we can introduce the speaker.
In a minute, yeah. We're directing on the fly here, so this is. What's your role in this, Josh? Because I know that you're so active in Rotary. Dave Gardner, I got to meet him in person finally,
which
is pretty cool. And, are you an officer in a Rotary situation this year?
No, I used to be the PR guy for the district, and I used to be an assistant governor, and those terms expired, and I've just basically been helping Dave Gardner up because he's a friend, and he's my business partner. So
So people who are here right now, these are volunteers in terms of trying to create a healthier community and a healthier planet, really, in terms of the drug addiction fight and so on.
Yeah.
And this will be going on here. If people, I know most people don't listen to us in the cars, but if you are, swing by.
We'll change
up
soon.
Well, I do. I listen to Bill when he's on. But at any rate, a lot of people here, and Dave was echoing what you had said, that this could be the next big Rotary fight.
Exactly. It's certainly of epidemic proportion in this country. It's no stranger to the communities that comprise Rotary District 7930, and that's roughly 53 cities and towns that span Boston north to Salem, New Hampshire, and east to the communities of the North Shore and Cape Ann. It's roughly just under 2,000 professional men and women who, you know, from bankers to real estate people to education, nonprofit directors, and so forth.
Okay, so we've got Leahy representatives are here, Josh, so I'm going to interrupt you. And Bill, if you can push them back a little bit here, we can get all of you on camera. That's good.
We usually do radio, so that's why we look the way
we
do.
Yeah, we got,
so I'm just apologizing for that up front here. But, so, first of all, from Leahy Health, we have
Jennifer Ferretra.
Mary Lou Hardy, Community Relations Manager.
Jennifer and Mary Lou. Okay, so, tell us about your roles, and then we'll talk a little bit more about Leahy's role. You ready to go?
Ready to go. So, my name is Mary Lou Hardy, Community Relations Manager for Leahy Health and fellow Rotarian. And we're very excited to be here today and to sponsor this event, as Leahy Health is very dedicated and committed to addressing substance abuse, opioid addiction, and we have a wide range of services in a very large geographical footprint, all the way to the North Shore, all the way down to Boston. So we're here today representing the programs and services that we offer the community.
You want to add on to that? No, you don't. Okay. Okay, that's fine.
No, I'm sorry.
I'm just kidding.
I'm a little camera shy, sorry. I'm Jennifer Fretcher. I currently oversee a couple of our detox programs, upwards of over 100 beds, some of our post-detox programs. And again, Leahy has a full continuum of care for anyone struggling with substance use, from inpatient, outpatient, medication-assisted treatment, and we are eager to help.
Let me ask, yeah.
And we also have joining us a little bit later today, we have Dr. Barry Ginsberg. He's the CEO of Leahy Health Behavioral Services. He's going to be kicking off the event, making some opening remarks, and introducing our keynote speaker, Marian Ryan.
So tell me about, and maybe, I don't, you're probably the one to ask this, about, so you have a number of beds, different programs, different levels, of so on, and they're all based out of the North Shore, most of them?
We service from the North Shore, and we also have a detox in Boston.
Okay. And is this something people go through their insurance companies or through other referral processes? How does that work?
We take referrals from hospitals, police departments, outreach workers. A lot of people are self-referred. We also, as far as insurance goes, we are contracted with all the MassHealth products, and we do have some private pay. Anyone has the ability to self-pay, but we're also contracted with some private insurance companies as well.
Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, and we also have a wide range of outpatient services right out of here. The Leahy Health Behavioral Services, their main office is right here in Danvers on Rosewood Drive, and they have a wide range of counseling services, behavioral services, mental health, and substance use program for family, adults, youth, anybody.
Any other message that you two want to get out of this today? Obviously, you have a keynote speaker with Dr. Ginsberg here, one of the speakers tonight. And clearly, there's so many other providers here, if you will, and maybe that, how do they interact and so on?
We are pretty collaborative when it comes to working with other providers. Our inpatient talks to our outpatient, and, you know, we're really working with the community to fight this epidemic.
Absolutely. I would ditto that, second that remark. And it is very, very important for us to collaborate with our community partners. We cannot do this alone. We wouldn't want to do this alone. We're all in this together. So an event like this helps us get to know each other and know what we're all doing and become aware of what other services are out there.
There's just so much work being done, and yet so much more has to be done, and there's always something else coming, another, if you will, wrinkle in the rug that's going to pop up here to deal with, for sure. I'm not going to put you on the spot again. Are you good to go here?
Fine, yes, I'm good. I've recovered from the camera.
All right, very good. Okay, we're doing karaoke now. Okay, so if closing it down. Okay. Anyways, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, take care. All right. Yep. There we go. Leahy Health. All right. There you go.
All right, Bill.
One of the big sponsors here. Josh Arnold's here. Rick Moore here. I'm Bill Newell. Thanks so much for being with us here. And we're in Danvers.
You had me a little nervous over there with the Sheriff's Department.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I know.
I've been spending a lot of time with those guys.
I know. And I'm glad you fixed your car. That's good.
I know. I mean, I was worried about that, but I forgot about the light that my daughter told me about around Christmas time. But I finally did get it fixed. But you know how some cars have a little warning when you have a burned out light? My car doesn't.
Nothing.
For some reason. So I've had
your chip is not working apparently.
My what?
Your chip. Your computer
well,
chip that puts all the lights on.
Chips aren't
that's right,
computer.
and that
I rely on.
And we're on our backup computer today. That's how bad it's been here. But Bill, of interest to me though, as an educator, is that this is something. This has exploded in the last 5 or 10 years in terms of public education. So this is a great thing. And I think what's going to come of this is the collaborating that goes among these people later on.
And well, you would hope so. Yeah.
How many more?
Oh, more. We want more. We do some more, yeah.
Okay, I've got Karina Paparolato. I think I'd like to have Kathleen.
Well, I can walk over with you if you want. Want me to walk over and you can introduce them to me with Dave?
Sure. Tylenol or
see, this is all live, folks.
Yeah, this is this is our floor director. This is like being on the floor of the convention.
We've got a few more, too, but why don't you take me and then...
Okay, let me know.
I'll just be quiet for 1 minute.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get them, yeah.
All right, Bill is headed off onto the floor. And I'm going to bring them back this way so we can actually get film on them.
But I need the camera.
We are at the DoubleTree in Danvers, where this is taking place.
No, they are. They're going to.
And this is live. Live streaming video.
Dave, come here so people can see you here. Dave Gardner, Rotary.
There he is. All right, hi there. So who do we have? Who are we going
to
have?
So I'd like to introduce you to Karina Pappalardo. Karina has multiple organizations she works with, the Psychological Center, among others. So I'll let her tell you what she does, but she's very involved in this conversation, and she's a great voice of her organizations and for the programs.
Karina, right? Okay. Pappalardo I got. Okay. So there you go. I used to play softball with a Pappalardo. There we go. So that's why it's can't forget that. So now, tell me, what organizations are you associated with?
So the Psychological Center has three programs. We're a nonprofit agency in Lawrence. We have Daybreak Shelter, which is an emergency homeless shelter for up to 50 guests. We have beds for 35 males and 15 females. What's unique about us is that we're actually a wet shelter, and what that means is that if someone is under the influence of drugs or alcohol, they can still come in and we will provide them services. We help them work on their recovery as well and get them all of the services that they need, working through partners that come into the shelter or assessing their needs that they might need outside the shelter. We also have two female residential recovery programs, Pegasus House and Women's View. Pegasus House is for females between the age of 18 and 25, and Women's View is for females over the age of 25. We have 15 beds in each of those programs. Typically, we're full, and typically, there's a wait list, as you can imagine.
You mentioned Lawrence. Where are the other two facilities? Are they in Lawrence, too?
Everything is in Lawrence. Yes, everything is in Lawrence, but we service anybody from the entire state of Massachusetts and beyond that as well.
So typically, you're heavy Essex County, probably, with your client.
Well, actually, heavy Essex County, but really, with the two female residential recovery programs, heavy for the entire state of Massachusetts. We're getting people from everywhere, so not just in our smaller geographical location, but we definitely have a large presence there and a large presence at Daybreak Shelter.
So tell me about the work, or the model, so to speak, of the two female residential centers. So somebody would come in and they would stay for about how long, or and then what are they receiving for treatment, and hopefully what's their exit plan?
So anyone can stay anywhere from 6 months to 12 months at the residential recovery programs, and it's all individual based, so it really depends on what their needs are. Strong family component is incorporated, harm reduction as well. There's a lot of individuals, a lot of ladies who come to us with prior unfortunate circumstances, whether it's domestic violence, sexual assault, living on the street, being homeless. So working with that mental health piece as well that they've suffered prior to the addiction. And the ultimate goal is to have them live healthy lives with recovery, as well as stay off the streets, reunite with their families. One of the things that we're seeing is a lot more mothers are coming in. So it's reuniting them with their families and making sure that these children are not burying their parents, and that as parents that they're not burying their children.
Dave, do you want to add in?
I'm amazingly impressed with the dedication that all the exhibitors have in this field, and it's really awe-inspiring. And as I said earlier in my conversation, the amount of work that they did to help pull this event off by recruiting each other and making it happen is amazing. And I'm incredibly in awe of the families who have suffered a loss and them paying it forward to make sure that doesn't happen to anybody else. And with that grief and that tremendous loss in their life, to focus on what it means to pay it forward is just inspiring.
Marina, is there any other message that you want to send out to folks here?
One more thing. You know, often people will say to me, how can you do this day in and day out? There's so much tragedy. And there is on the news, and there's a lot of people suffering, but they don't see the successes that I see day in and day out. And when I know that every night I have 80 individuals safe inside and individuals that are graduating and finding that hope through that recovery, that's what makes me be able to smile every day and sleep well at night, knowing that we're helping many people.
Good. Okay. All right, Karina, thank you so much. Karina Pappalardo. Okay. All right. And Dave,
have you introduced Dr. Doug Griffin?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay.
Do you want me to go over there and grab him? Or do you, yeah. Why don't you come with me? Yeah. Okay.
Wait. Hold Dave. Hold on. Yeah. What's, just don't go too far with the mic. We had a little bit of breakup on the other side. That's okay. All right. So Dave Gardner with Bill Newell. going to fade off. We are broadcasting both on radio and audio. Audio and video is what I'm trying to say. So Bill is heading across the room there. Josh Arnold is here with us. And I'm going to go all the way across the room. We'll see. I don't know if I can hear him or see him. Do you see Bill? Where'd he go?
I'm going to do it right here. Can you hear me now, Rick? Are we good?
Where are you? I don't see you.
Are we good?
Yes.
We can do it right here, I guess.
Nope, now we lost him.
Not a doctor. Just Doug Griffin.
I don't know what that means, but and we're still getting me right, Rick?
Yep,
okay,
yep.
Good. So tell me about your addiction and what you're doing.
All right, I'm with the Addiction Policy Forum. We're a Washington-based organization. We're nationwide, and we're here to help people that are in the business of preventing opiate abuse. We provide information, literature, training, videos, whatever it needs to, you know, so we send a common message.
So you kind of live in the D.C. area, do you? Or?
No. I'm the New Hampshire State Chair of the Addiction Policy Forum, and I brought Lindsay with me today. She's the Northeast Regional Coordinator for the Addiction Policy Forum.
So the message that you want to get out to folks here would be what?
Contact us so that we can work together. We're trying to send the same message to everyone. So if everyone would sign up with us and go onto our website of www.addictionpolicy.org, sign on, we'll all send the same message.
So when somebody goes onto that website, what will they find there?
They'll find all kinds of resources and information about addiction, recovery, treatment, basically all the six pillars of the CARA legislation.
What would you say are, looking at the whole problem, you know, as it's big in everywhere around the Northeast, what have been some of the successes in the last couple of years, but yet what are the remaining big challenges ahead?
All right, 3 years ago I lost my daughter to an overdose of heroin. At that time, we couldn't get insurance coverage. We couldn't find a recovery bed for her. Insurance wouldn't cover anything that we were trying to do. And since then, we've tried to raise awareness, and now we're trying to give the message of hope, people getting to recovery. We're getting recovery-friendly workplaces, so they have a place to go to work when they come out of treatment. So conditions are improving. The stigma is beginning to ease.
No doubt about that. And as far as moving forward on that piece, what do you find yourself kind of looking forward at?
We want to continue to spread the message of hope and provide the resources necessary for people to find their way into treatment and recovery.
Good. Anything else I should know here that...
I think we're good.
All right, Doug, thank you very much. Nice meeting you. Okay. All right. Rick, I'll send it back to you.
All right, Bill, thank you very much. Sitting here with Josh Arnold, we're on the other side of the room. And again, we are broadcasting from the World Peace and Understanding Showcase. There'll be a dinner later on tonight, and... Now, Josh, the dinner is set up, the tables are set up over here to our left. As let me just adjust the camera here. The camera, we're looking at the showcase off to our right, but the dinner is set up. Tell me about that. Well, who's involved in that?
Well, that will be the Rotarians from among the 47 clubs will be coming. Every club sends so many people.
So, all right. So Dave is talking to Josh right now. So that's fine. Is this a Rotary meeting, an official meeting?
Yeah. Well, it's a district meeting. Each club will send so many people. I don't know that it necessarily counts as a makeup if you didn't make the lunch meeting. But
okay. All right. I think Josh, Dave needs you at the moment. So again, this is live. This is live video streaming. We are live audio streaming as well from the DoubleTree in Danvers on this. That's a Wednesday afternoon. Beautiful weather outside. Way too warm for us skiers. But let's see. So what are you directing now?
Perry. I'm trying to get him to do one from Perry.
Okay, and that. Perry was the original program, the original Angel program that was actually created in Gloucester. So we got somebody coming over here now.
Yeah.
All right. And all right. So let me go back to my my
right.
Video post.
Right. I got to
hang over to the video spot here. Okay. All right. I'm back in position. Hold it up a little closer to you, Bill. Yep.
Okay. Are we good here?
We're good.
Okay.
That's good.
And from the Perry program, we have.
I'm Allie Hunter McDade. I'm the executive director.
Great. And you're out of Gloucester?
Our office is in Gloucester, yes.
Okay.
And how long have you been with PAR-A? Obviously, an organization that's done a lot of work, and we'll tell you about that in a moment, too.
Sure. So I started the position in August 2016. So PAR-A, the Police Assisted Addiction and Recovery Initiative, we work with about 75 police departments across Massachusetts creating entry points to treatment.
You guys are beyond Massachusetts now, too, obviously, too.
We are. We're actually in 32 states, almost 400 police departments.
Got a few more states to go. Got a few more to go. Maybe a trip to Hawaii. Do you have Hawaii yet?
We don't have Hawaii. I would accept an invitation to go.
I don't want to make light about your work that you do here, but, you know, a trip to Hawaii to set some things up might not be a bad idea.
Yeah, the model essentially is that a police department reaches out to us when they want our support to create a program. So we'd love to meet with any department interested.
So I guess for our listeners that don't know about it, or viewers that don't know about it, tell us about the PAR-A program and the basic fundamentals of it.
Sure. The basic idea is that law enforcement have a front row seat to the opioid epidemic, and they're in a unique position to create pathways to treatment. So PAR-A is a nonprofit that helps support those police departments, build programs, strengthen their programs, and ultimately reduce overdose deaths and increase access to treatment.
As a alternatives to lockups and different things, you know, not that that doesn't happen still, but there are alternatives out there. And you're right. I mean, police departments, I've talked with different policemen over the years and leadership in police departments, and they are so much on the front line. There's so many issues that they are aware of in their cities and towns that the rest of the community can't even imagine, I'm thinking.
Yeah, exactly. They're responding to overdoses. They're responding to calls for service, responding to the, you know, revolving door of people committing crimes to support their addiction. So they really are uniquely situated to help people.
All right, so now we have our TV face here, Rick, with us. We're radio here, basically.
I'm Rick. I don't have any questions. I just wanted to be on the camera, that's all. No, but seriously, but this started off as the Angel Program, and how has that evolved into what PAR-A is now, and is the Angel Program still part of this?
Yeah, so the Angel Program is still very much part of it. Right as soon as the Gloucester Police Department opened their doors and said people could come in without fear of arrest, it caught national attention, and it caught the attention of police departments that were looking to approach this issue differently and just were looking for a tool and looking for support on how do they go about that. So PAR-A works very closely with Gloucester Police Department. We have a recovery coach who's embedded and co-responds with them. Our office is on Main Street, right across the street from the police department. So it's about supporting Gloucester Police Department, but also supporting other departments across the country that were inspired by what happened at Gloucester.
And I mentioned the Angel Program, but I didn't say what it was or what it is.
So the Angel Program basically is built on the idea that anyone can come into the police station 24 hours a day, regardless of where they live, what insurance they have, and that'll be their first steps on their path to recovery. So the police department will help them get into treatment and help them stay on that path.
Are there still volunteers who help out with that?
So it's not so much based on volunteering anymore. Right now we have a full-time recovery coach, care advocate. So he's really the primary point of contact, and he's able to stay in touch with someone from when they get into treatment, through their treatment transitions, continuum of care, and then even afterwards, following up with people maybe a year after they first get into detox. So it's kind of transitioned to one person providing more deep support over a longer period of time.
How is this working together or maybe in partnership with the county or with the state?
So right now we're mostly working one police department at a time, but there are a growing number of police departments and a growing number of police departments working together. So, for example, we work with the Essex County Sheriff's Department, and they're touching the entire county. We're working with Newburyport, Ipswich, many other police departments in the county. So, you know, the more police departments that come on board, the easier it'll be for people to access treatment in their own community, which is really the goal.
There are so many different people here and vendors here in terms of helping out, but PAR-A is totally different, and it seems to me that if you can get the message out there that, hey, if you want some help, man, this is the place, just walk in.
Yeah, so the idea is that for participating police departments that have a model where you just walk in and ask for help, and they'll help you navigate treatment without shame, without fear of arrest, and that's really what makes it unique. We also have a lot of programs that they might follow up after an overdose and actually reach out to you and offer services. So each program is a little bit different, but the idea is that police departments are there to help you navigate treatment.
Is there still sort of an amnesty type thing if a person walks into a police department and he is messed up? Is he going to get arrested?
So the idea is that if somebody walks in to the Gloucester Police Department, they can bring their drugs or paraphernalia to be destroyed without fear of arrest. Not every program has that component, but that is one that some programs have decided to have.
Good. I got my FaceTime. Thank you.
Okay, right. Now the ratings just went through the roof up here. I mean, but Anything else you want to share with us about PARI?
I guess I want to just say if there's any police department out there that's looking for support, we're, you know, free to join and we're happy to offer resources. And if anyone's looking to volunteer or looking to access care, just reach out and we'll try to help.
Sounds good. Nice meeting you. Best of luck. Yep, keep up the good work. All right. All right, I think we got somebody else here. Yeah, we got another.
Hi.
I think we'll have somebody else
yep.
in just a moment here.
That's what it looks
not
like.
Not yet. Okay, let me, Rick, hold it. I'll go over and get the Navy. Want me to do the Navy?
We'll get the Navy from Marblehead. We'll get the Navy from Marblehead. MSO News Sports, we are at the DoubleTree.
Yes.
Peace and understanding.
Hi.
Sounds like
all right,
something
we're
out
over
of the
here. 60s. I'm probably catching you at a horrible time here, but we got this. Now, this group here, we got some video over here, but tell me about who you are and what you're doing here.
Captain Bob Urbetta, for the Navy's Campaign Drug-Free Program, and we're one of five flagship programs, community service programs. And we go out to, we have sailors and Marines, Coast Guard, we can get them, to come out and talk to kids. Talk to kids, stay off drugs, stay in school, stay out of the gangs, and if they need mentoring, we'll provide mentors for them.
You're right out of Marblehead, right? So now, do you work with the Marblehead folks?
I work with anybody in the North Shore. I'm going up to southern Maine. New Hampshire has big problems up there. I've talked to Governor Sununu, and he's anybody from any part of the community that can give us a hand up there. I said, well, you got the Navy anyway, so.
Well, that Navy, the New Hampshire has a coastline, just like about as big as Marblehead, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and we have a Navy presence up there. I'm training six hospital corpsmen to go out and talk to kids.
Who else? Who, now you.
My name is Conrad McKinney, and I'm a deputy sheriff, but I'm also a veteran, and I'm working here with the captain. This is for the kids, the lost souls out there, and believe me, that's why we're involved, going to the schools, prevention, to get the kids before they get involved in drug abuse, and that's our job.
Well, Captain, any other message that you want to share with us about some of the things you have here or how they can get in contact with you and so on?
My email is probably the easiest, raurbetta@comcast.net. I'll go pretty much anywhere in New England. Actually, my title is Campaign Drug-Free New England Coordinator. So I'll go up and down the coast, inland, you name it, I'll go.
Even up and down the coast, though.
Up and down the coast.
So New Hampshire, Portsmouth, but maybe not Concord.
I've got Rhode Island. I've got the Connecticut coastline. We got a big base down in Newport. So that's my... After I get through training at Portsmouth, I'm going to be down at the Newport. We got a war college down there and Education Command.
So we have your contact information. So if anybody really did need to get a hold of you, and they could email us through our website if they
absolutely.
See this.
Okay. Absolutely.
And we'll get in contact.
Absolutely. Anything I can do.
All right, great. Thank you very much. All right. All right. And Girls Inc.? Yeah, let's come over here. Come on over here. All right.
Okay,
Rick, so, I've got Girls Inc. here from
Okay,
Lynn,
we're going to do Girls Inc.
over here.
And then we got to talk to this young
Perfect.
Lady over here as well.
Let's do Girls Inc. first here.
Okay.
And we, from Girls Inc. in Lynn, we have...
Alyssa.
Okay. What's your last name, Alyssa?
Brown.
Okay, Alyssa Brown. Not to be confused with Ayla Brown.
Correct.
Okay.
No, not Ayla Brown, no. Did play basketball, but not...
Do you sing? Do you sing? No.
Sing either, unfortunately, no.
Some of the folks we've been talking to... You know, we do offer karaoke to them at the end of the interview.
I don't think karaoke would be a good idea.
No, okay, that's fine. Well, Alyssa, so Girls Inc. So tell us some of the jury here. So somebody were at the exhibit, Girls Inc. and Lynn. Actually, tell me about the Girls Inc. itself. A lot of folks may not know about Girls Inc., but we'll start there.
Okay, so Girls Inc. is a program. We have programs from elementary school all the way up to teenagers. Our teen and middle school programs are free. We have things that range from STEM programs at the middle school to substance abuse prevention and teen pregnancy prevention and just fun things like Teen Leadership Academy that are going on for the teens. And most of our programs are drop-in or you register, and they're great opportunities for young women.
It's an organization that's been around for years, really, but you're growing. You continue to grow.
Absolutely. absolutely. We're continuing to grow, continuing to add new programs, bringing in new speakers and new opportunities for our girls. We just took a huge group of girls to the Women's Conference, which is the biggest one in the country. Great opportunity for high schoolers to see high-profile women that have been really successful, too.
That wouldn't interest me. No, I'm just kidding you. No, that's an awful thing to say.
A lot of women in one place, but
I'm just kidding. Women of high, women of important women. I'm just kidding. Okay, now the other. I know you're also doing something with prom education in Lynn. Tell me about that piece for parents.
Right. So for prom parent, it's prom parent initiative. It's April 4th at Lynn Classical and April 10th at Lynn English. It's a program where we do education about the social hosting law and different components to increase substance use around prom. We're also going to talk about marijuana and vaping this year. And if your child, if your parent attends, the child gets $20 off the prom ticket. So a great incentive to come. We're also going to do Hidden in Plain Sight, which is great for parents to see different things that kids are using. So a great opportunity for parents to get a lot of education in like an hour and a half. It's not that long.
Keep it moving right
yeah,
now.
Absolutely.
Okay, absolutely. Anything else you want to share with us?
So we're going to be doing also a hashtag Black Lives, Black Lungs event. It's a movie that's about 15 minutes long, but the girls are going to do a conversation. So some of our teens at Girls Inc. are actually going to lead the conversation about how the tobacco industry has targeted people of color for years. And as Lynn has a large population of people of color, it's a great conversation to get involved in and kind of see what your community is doing about these issues, such as teens being targeted with advertisements towards tobacco.
And we'll follow up, okay,
yeah,
in the days ahead.
Right. Yeah, thank you very much.
All right, Melissa, thank you very much. Good. I'm sorry.
Another one, Bill. We're going to go from Danvers to Salem to Lowell.
All right, come on over here.
There we go.
And
Kathleen McDonald.
Kathleen McDonald from Lowell.
I'm the executive director for the Megan House Foundation.
Okay. Megan House. How do you spell Megan? Because I'm not...
M-E-G-A-N.
That's the way to spell Megan, by the way. My niece spells it that, or her parents spelled it that way. But anyways, but there's so many different ways, and they're all fine. I'm just kidding. But the Megan House Foundation?
That's right. So we have a 28-bed facility in Lowell, Mass., and it is for long-term residential treatment for women who are 18 to 26 years old. They are recovering from substance use disorder. They're recovering from any, you know, number of co-occurring mental health disorders. Because they're young women, they're facing all kinds of specific challenges, you know, to being female and recovering from violence and sexual violence and those pieces of the puzzle. They have a tall mountain to climb, but recovery is possible for them. And when they're healthy, they're miraculous.
And their length of stay might be, you how long would that be possibly?
They can stay with us 6 months or longer. We also have for graduate and for and for other programs who've completed 90 days or more of treatment, they can start to transition back into the world and pay rent at Aaron's House, which is in Dracut. And that's an 8-bed home. It's beautiful. It's actually newly built in 2017. You'd want to live there. I'd want to live there. It's beautiful. But they have sober supportive services on site for them, so they can continue their recovery throughout the first year and beyond.
I won't ask you how to spell Aaron's home, though, but, I mean, it's probably another name that's going to be different.
It's four letters. It's Aaron.
Gotcha. Aaron. All right, another one. Home run. Okay. Hey, so you're here today. I mean, were you out to accomplish anything other than getting awareness for your organization or making additional connections?
Both. I want people to know that, you know, we're a young organization, but we have beds available both at Megan House and at Aaron's House for women at the different stages of their recovery. And, you know, we want them to come to us. Our care is truly comprehensive. They can have individual, family, group therapy. They have fitness options and social activities. They attend sober community support groups. But they also just come at recovery from a very individual approach. Whatever you need to recover, we work with you to create that kind of situation for you because the brain is individual.
Now, you probably mentioned this, but the age, could they possibly be in high school still? I mean, or older than high school?
Generally, it's 18 to 26. Gotcha. You can actually live at Aaron's House because you can stay there for up to 3 years. You can live at Aaron's House through age 30.
You could retire there.
No. Let's hope not.
No. But that's fantastic. I mean, there's so many people in this room are doing so much work here on this issue. And what's the best news you can share with me of some of the successes that you've had?
Our graduates, first of all, just being in their presence, you get the sense that they are healthy, happy young women. And you can see it on their faces, and it's inspiring. But they now, once they, you know, finish their treatment and then continue into maintaining their recovery, they earn their driver's licenses. They get their high school equivalency diplomas or graduate from associate degree certificate programs. They go back to four-year colleges. Most importantly, they reunite with family, whether it's estranged parents or siblings or their own children. They are able to come back together and be a family again because they're healthy.
And you mentioned the individual aspect of that piece, and it's so important that there's I was talking with somebody over here from the PBD group that, about the asset model and how you're basically kind of in a way rebuilding or reinitiating people into making decisions. It's simple, and yet they're so important in building that confidence as we were young growing up and making and developing, you know, at whatever we were developing towards.
Yeah. As the women stay and the healthier they get, they start to take on more responsibilities and they also get more freedoms. But even that is part of figuring out where their strengths lie and how they can be leaders and even be big sisters to young women who are just a few months behind them. But it's such a transformational 6 months that they're ages ahead of them already.
And they've suffered more than anyone should at that age, for sure. And then, and yet, as you, if you have different levels there, you have people coming in for their day, first, second day, with people that are on the success track, and that's important too.
That's right. I will say, Rotary is such a goodwill feeling that, you know, in our communities. I just want to do like a thumbs up for Rotary. You know,
our Rotary guys will appreciate that. And anything, people can contact you what way? If you want to get on a website, a phone number, an email?
TheMeganHouse.org. Don't skip the
M-E-G-A-N, folks.
TheMeganHouse.org will lead you to us, whether you're looking to enroll someone or you're looking to volunteer or you want to help us out.
Good. All right, great. Nice meeting you. Thank you. Congratulations. Yeah. Keep up the
Thank
good
you.
Work.
Thank you very much.
Right, Josh, you have somebody else?
Yep. They're rolling in. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. What's that? All right. I'm coming in blind here, but that's the best way for me, because otherwise I can't make an excuse. Yeah, so you are?
I'm Dave Clark.
Okay, and?
I'm Kathy Leonard.
Okay. And you are with?
I'm with Learn to Cope.
Same thing.
I'm with Coping Today. It's a kind of a subsidiary, a part of Learn to Cope.
All right, I'm sorry, Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. So Learn to Cope is a support group that was started back in 1993, I believe, around the opioid addiction and the need to have some support for parents and family members, because it is a family disease. And so now there are 25 chapters around the state that meet together on a weekly basis, and our goal is to bring hope to people who are in crisis, educate people, and resources that will help them get to a place where they can bring their loved one to a place of getting help.
That's so important, because we've talked to a lot of different people. You know, it's centered on the person that's addicted, but you're right. I mean, from that person radiates out the whole, so many different people that are impacted, in particular parents, siblings, and so on.
Exactly, it does. And it's never ending. So, and Kathy, she can tell you about what she does, but it's the family that's lost someone to addiction.
Right. Sadly, some of the members have learned to cope, have loved ones that don't make it, and I'm included in that. I lost my son 3 years ago to a heroin overdose. So we have a division of Learn to Cope that is grief support, because for every person that's lost, there are family members left behind that need help, that need support. And these grief support groups are strictly for people who've lost someone to overdose, whether it be alcohol or drugs, because there is a stigma associated with that type of loss. And everybody in that group understands what that feels like.
And you can speak to this, but, you know, losing a child is probably one of the worst things that can happen to anybody. So you have that on top of the opioid issue. But I guess the the statistics of what happens to families after that is also very discouraging, isn't it?
It is, and sometimes the families tend to be left behind and forgotten. You know, like my life will never be the same as with everybody in our groups, and that's hard to take. It's hard to deal with, and a lot of people don't like to talk about it with us because they're afraid they're going to make us cry, or they're afraid they're going to remind us of what we went through, that struggle, you know, for the people that are in the meeting rooms of Learn to Cope. It's difficult. It's very hard to deal with, and it doesn't go away, and it doesn't matter how old your child is. It's still the worst thing. That is the absolute worst thing, in my opinion, that can happen to anybody.
And your daughter's name was, son, I'm sorry. Jonathan, no, you're right, Jonathan. Okay, and how old was he?
27.
Mm-hmm. And I think that in both cases, those who are grieving the loss, those who are in the middle of the crisis, the marriage is fragile, and there's a lot of breakup of marriages that happen because of the addiction issue. So
I read some of that, and it's true. It's just it's a very difficult, very very stressful time, and it's just hard. And all the things related before and after that, just it's a terrible thing to happen.
It is.
If folks wanted to get in contact with your organization or support it in some way or reach out to get into one of the groups, how would they do that?
Sure. Well, with Learn to Cope, you can go on the website, learn2cope.org, and there's a list of all the meetings. There's a chat room that's available with a lot of good, experienced people that will go back and forth and give you good information. And in your grief.
Actually, learn2cope.org also has the grief support meetings on it.
Maybe you could share maybe a story from one of those meetings or something like that about, you know, it's not like it's one of these things in that it's not like people get better, so to speak, but they, you know, maybe how they begin to deal with that piece and through the support group.
Sure. It's a slow process. Most of the people that come into brand new into a Learn to Cope group is stressed out. You can see it in their face, their body language. They sit quietly. They're afraid to say anything. And when they do start speaking, the tears usually flow, not just from that person, but from many in the group, because we understand exactly what she's feeling or what he is feeling. And then if they continue to come, what we find is that stress in their face starts to leave. They start to walk away from the meetings with a better understanding of setting boundaries, of not allowing their loved one to manipulate them, not to be a enabler. And so you start to get healthy. And if we can get the parents to be more healthy, then they're better positioned to help their loved one.
Kathy, do you want to add to that at all?
No, I agree with Dave. The emotions of going through something like this, whether you're struggling with someone who's active or whether you lose somebody, I can't tell you how many times I thought I was crazy for thinking and doing and saying the things that I did, even when I was at meetings like Learn to Cope. And it's comforting to be with people that understand. It's really helpful.
I'm so sorry for your loss, and very nice meeting you. Keep up the good work. And are you right around? We're in Danvers, obviously, as we speak now, but you must be right in this area.
I'm from Ipswich, and our chapter is located in Ipswich in terms of the Learn to Cope. Actually, you're from?
I'm a little further away. I'm from Marlborough, the Metro West area, but we have meetings all over the state as well for the grief support.
So nice.
And I'd just like to say, so grateful the Rotary is focusing on the opioid issue in the Commonwealth.
And there's just so many different ways, you know, support that needs to be addressed in this issue. And for what you do, it's very important. So thank you for your work.
Thank you.
All right. Learn to Cope.
Wow. Bill, we need to take a little break here. When I check the video, I'm not getting it. So why don't you take this chance to check the video, and I'll chat with Josh for a while. Okay. Check the video. Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. So while we try to get organized here, boy, that was very emotional. And very difficult. Okay. Josh, if you could get her to the chair and show her how to put the mic on. If you want to get in the chair, it'll be easier. So we can, yeah. And we'll just, yeah. Yep. The second one, please. And if we're okay. All right. We had to check something. Now, what I want you to do, Julie? I'm Rick. If you could, see, it goes on like this, okay? Not like that. So if you could put that on comfortably, we'll chat with you. No, like this. Have this go back on your neck.
On my neck?
Yeah, see how I have it on? See this? Yeah. There you go. There you go. That's better.
Is this supposed to be on my ears?
Nope. You just want to be comfortable.
No,
you can't hear anything. You can only hear me. Okay. So Julie Geary is with us, and Julie, you're the president of the Gloucester Rotary?
Yes, I am the president of 2017 to 2018.
Okay. And so tell us about the Gloucester Rotary, and then we'll get into what's happening here.
Well, you know, we're up on that little island of our own, so we kind of have our own little thing that we do. But we have a very successful Rotary Club. We have some wonderful members that have been with us for a long time. And recently, in the past couple of years, we've picked up a lot of new, younger members, which is really refreshing because we're getting some really nice new ideas and, you know, new blood.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing wrong with new blood.
Well, I was talking with Dave Gardner, and he was talking about service, and it's so nice to hear that you have younger people, because we point to Congress down south, and they're all in the business about getting reelected when they used to be in the business about serving the country. So it is good to hear that with Rotary, that you are getting younger people, and the Gloucester chapter and other chapters are growing?
We're maintaining.
Maintaining, okay.
We're pretty good. We seem to be losing a few, but we're gaining a few. And actually, in my presidency so far, we've had 5 brand new members, which is terrific. And I think we may be having a couple more come on before I'm done in the end of June. So I mean, we're aggressively trying new things. We have the service membership. And it hasn't been quite as successful as we thought it might be, but I think there's other things that we need to look at as far as that membership is concerned, and I think we need to change up what we initially started with as the outline for that.
One thing that crosses my mind, sometimes the numbers don't really mean that much if you've got quality. And sometimes you have quantity and people aren't able to contribute as much as perhaps you'd like them to be able to. So I know, having worked with Josh for so long, there is a tremendous amount of activity and positive action with the Gloucester Rotary members. They're very active.
Well, the last couple of years we've had some wonderful fundraisers, and we donated $107,000 last year back, which is an incredible amount of money. And the projects that we do have are becoming more and more successful over the years. And these new members that have come in are strong members. They're great. They have great ideas. They're really behind Rotary. And they have great circles of friends and business people that we didn't have before. And, you know, that's so effective when you have someone in that position. So it's really been great.
Now, Gloucester Rotary, like all Rotary clubs, are working. They work toward a national and an international goal, but also a local goal. What does Gloucester do in terms of local activity? Because I know that a friend of mine was honored for, I can't think of the gentleman's name, but he got an award a couple of years ago for service to the community and so on. So what does Gloucester do, or what does the Gloucester chapter do in terms of local activity involving people?
We have quite a bit of, actually quite a few members of our group are work in social areas. So a lot of them are already in.
So it's double duty.
Yeah, it's wonderful because we have all these people that are in these jobs and social services, and we are actually turning around and donating to them and working in consortium with them so that we have these great groups that are, you know, 5, 6, 7 different sets of organizations working together. So mm-hmm. That has been a big thing. We're always very involved with the schools. We have a wonderful Interact Club. It ranges from 35 to 70 members. They've been very successful. They have raised pretty much between $6,000 and $7,000 every year.
So you're familiar with Annie Grassetti and her craziness. Okay.
So it, you know, in that sense, we've had a great relationship with the high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the future, we're looking towards maybe getting the middle school more involved, because that always feeds the high school and maybe eventually the elementary school. So we've got a lot going on, and we are in all different aspects of the community too, which is really nice. And as a matter of fact, we're going to have our 100th anniversary in 2023, which is also the city's 400th anniversary.
Can you believe that? Yep.
So we are going to have a $100,000 project, which we have not decided on yet, and that will be for the city.
Wow.
And there's three or four members of our Rotary that are actually on the 400th steering committee.
Unbelievable. That is cool. And I'm so glad you said 100th anniversary instead of 100-year anniversary.
100th.
Doesn't that? But it drives me crazy. Anniversary means by the year. Anyway, it's the one-year anniversary. No, it's the first anniversary. Can you tell I was a teacher? Math teacher. Okay, this is the World Peace and Understanding Showcase. And dinner, of course, later on tonight with a keynote speaker. The opiate thing, I became aware of when my mom had a stroke. And I didn't know that she had been addicted to opiates. But she had. She was addicted to painkillers. I never knew that. She never displayed any crazy activity as a mom. But when she was when she had the stroke and came down off the drugs, that's when we learned about it. And that came as a result of an operation when she needed painkillers, overprescribed the painkillers. I had surgery a few years ago, abdominal surgery, gave me a bottle of painkillers, and the doctor said, "Don't be a hero. Take these anytime you need them." I took one. Years later, you know how you take your stuff out of the medicine cabinet, take it down to the Rose Baker Center, and they dispose of it? Well, I got the bottle out of, it was maybe 10 years old, got it out of the medicine cabinet. It was oxycondone or something like that. Mm-hmm. Prescription for 30. I emptied them onto the table to count them. There were 29. There were 29 in that bottle. In light of what I know now, it seems to me the doctor would have been better advised telling me, giving me maybe 5 or 7 of them, maybe enough for a week, and
you
saying,
never do it that way.
No, but and saying, take it only if you need it. This thing is insidious, and it's absolutely out of control now. So what does this mean in terms of being a mom, in terms of being a spokesperson for the Rotary? What does this gathering here today mean?
Well, I'll tell you what. The opioid crisis is something that is very near and dear to my heart. I have two children. One is, they're both recovering addicts. One has been clean and sober for 5 years.
Wonderful.
He's turned his life around. My other child is my daughter, who's lovely, but she still struggles with many issues. She is not, she does not do street drugs of any sort, but she is over-medicated again from a doctor legally, and she struggles with daily routine and just trying to do the right things because she's over-medicated. And years ago, when someone was a drug addict, people just thought, oh, well, you know, they probably had the wrong parents or
yep.
they had the wrong upbringing. Well, you know what? This is in everybody's backyard. This is a problem that has taken itself to a level, and Oxycontin is the reason that this opioid crisis has actually taken its wings and it is flying. The scary part now is that anyone that starts with that is never going to be able to afford it. I don't care who they are. And it leads to heroin. And now the heroin is laced with fentanyl. And fentanyl was designed as a tranquilizer for horses. It's deadly. You are playing like Russian roulette when you're taking this heroin. And you know what? These people are addicts. They didn't choose to be addicts. They didn't choose to live their life
Nobody's
way.
Born saying, I want to grow up to be an
no,
addict.
No, and everyone has to understand that. You know, over the years, some people try things and some people don't. But no one who tries it the first time ever thinks that's where they're going.
Julie, is there anybody, and this might be an unfair question because of the people who are here today, the people who are here today are gathered here for to avail themselves or avail the public to them about education, about recovery, about help in the community, and so on. Do you know if there's anybody working on a higher level in terms of this prescription drug thing that the big pharma is so making so many billions of dollars? And the thing is, I mean, most of pharmaceuticals that. You know, drugs aren't designed to cure you. They're designed to make you need them again. You know, even if it's blood pressure medicine, it didn't cure the blood pressure. It just says you got to keep buying it.
So if you saw, and I don't know if you did, but 60 Minutes had a wonderful, it's had two different things on, and it was about the people that have been working in the DEA as lawyers and DEA agents working together to go after the pharmaceutical companies that are producing these drugs. And what has happened is that the pharmaceutical lobby is so strong and the businesses are so wealthy that they turned around and they're trying to change legislation to take out these companies. And what has happened is that the DEA lawyers have been hired by the drug companies and are now representing them against the United States because they know so much about the lobbying and whatever else needs to be done with these laws. These medical companies have to take responsibility, and it has to stop. They're making billions of dollars.
So in the meantime, what's the best advice you can give with all these people here today to anybody, really? And obviously it's to not start, but I think education is just so important, and especially with experimenting with kids and also with body awareness when you go in for surgery or whatever.
You know, as a parent, as a grandparent, I think that as young as kids are, we need to teach them. And I'm bringing up two grandchildren. I have a 6-year-old and a 14-year-old that I have custody of. I have, since day one, let them understand that there is something that adults do sometimes that makes them not the person that they are. So it can be as simple as that with a young child, whereas your 14-year-old, they know. They know. So they need to understand that no one starts off as an addict. They need to be educated. You need to talk to them. You need to sit them in the car is the best place, because you can drive in the car. they can't get out of the car.
Captive
you
audience.
Shut the radio off, and they have to listen to you. Mm-hmm. So it's a marvelous format.
Mm-hmm.
But the education of these kids, they need to understand. I mean, we're finally getting a grasp on smoking cigarettes. This is another thing that, yeah, you're going to die from cigarettes eventually, but you're going to die from drugs a whole lot sooner. And education is definitely the way to go, in that they just need to be aware of it, just like they need to be aware of guns and things that are going on and be observant about life. They need to understand and be educated.
And I got to say that the representatives here that we've talked with today, who we've talked with, everything is just so positive, and it seems like this is a ball that is moving forward.
And you can see over the past 10 years that the stigma of addiction has changed. You know, they now have mm-hmm. a thing in the Middleton jail. When you go in there as a drug addict, they used to just throw you in a cell and let you detox. I mean, you could die from that. You could die as an alcoholic. But now they have a special treatment program, and instead of going into, you know, in the regular jail population, which they shouldn't be, they're put into a situation for addicts. So they're training them, and they're trying to help them, which makes so much more
mm-hmm,
sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, Julie, it's so nice to meet you, and any other words as president of the Gloucester Rotary Club, or as a mom, or as a grandma?
I have to tell you that I'm having the time of my life this year, and I am
wonderful.
So enjoying
isn't that great?
It, and it's gone by so quickly, so.
Okay.
And
Did you do the plunge? Did you go in the water there?
I did. So far, I've raised $2,200. I'm still
that
looking
works.
For donations if anyone wants to pitch in, because I'd like to get to 3,000, but if I don't, I did do it, and I'm very happy that I did.
Awesome. So nice to meet you. Thank
very
you.
Nice to
good
meet
luck,
you
and good luck with everything.
Thank you so much.
Everything's going to be fine. You're going to make it. The kids are going to make it. All right, so we'll turn this off, and we're going to go back to Bill. I got to swing the camera around.
Okay. All right, Rick.
Yep. Go ahead.
As you swing around the camera, we'll get going. Lyle Herod is with us from Danvers Cares.
Hey, how's it going?
Got the name right, got the organization.
Perfect.
All right. And we're done. Thanks, Lyle. No. I'm on a roll. Okay. Well, Lyle, tell us about Danvers Cares and your organization. Very similar to Peabody Cares.
So we actually
in Danvers.
We do a lot of work with Peabody. We work with all the towns around here, but we are a program of the Danvers Public Schools. We are a grant-funded community prevention coalition. So we do a lot of work with youth and families to encourage overall wellness, but with a focus towards mental, behavioral health aspects and substance abuse awareness and prevention.
And I know one of the things that you do is you involve the seniors at the high school to engage the freshmen when they come into the high school. Is that do I have that close?
You do, yeah. So it's called the Atlas and Athena program. And what we do is we have our seniors, senior athletes. They tend to be the captains of their teams and in high academic standing. They act as mentors to the incoming freshman athletes. So they meet with them over the course of an entire week every day after school to go over really important topics like how to properly exercise, take rest, also to make sure that you're not abusing prescription medications and opioids, and just overall how to be a good, productive, healthy student athlete.
Now, are you able to engage everyone at Danvers High School at some way? I mean, I don't know whether they have, I'm blanking out on the block that they might call it when you have you talk about issues. I think Danvers does that, though, right?
Advisory.
Yeah, are you involved with the advisory program there?
So we do help sometimes during advisories. What we try and do is we try and have a lot of youth-led initiatives. So we want to, like you said, we want to get everybody from the schools involved. We want to get every grade, every student involved, however we can. So we actually have a group of youth leaders. They're high school students who are, you know, invested in the causes, and then they come up with activities and events as a way of promoting these positive, healthy messages around school.
If I were to call on you to cite a success or you know, a program that you say, well, I like the way that turned out, you know, what might you single out to me?
Well, most recently, leaders were really worried about the way how stressful and anxiety-producing the midterm exam periods can be, and they cited that as one of the main sort of problems that they see amongst their peers, is stress, anxiety, mental health concerns. So what they did was they did some outreach to a local therapy dog organization. They're called the Perfect Paws Pet Ministry, and they brought therapy dogs into the schools so that after their midterm exam periods, they were able to decompress and de-stress with some really great dogs.
And I know there's also debates out there whether you should have midterms or whether you should just, you know, go back and just do regular classes and continue on. So you're still doing midterms in Danvers then?
Well, I think the kids might argue against the midterms, but I'll leave that up to the administrators.
No, I'm not putting you on the spot on that. Yeah. All right, Lyle, anything else you want to share with us?
No, thanks so much for covering this event. It's been really great, and thanks to the Rotary Club for this.
Oh, if somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what would they do to get in?
So they can go to, thank you for asking, it's danverscares.org. It's on Facebook, and also you can email me. It's lyleherod@danvers.org. Just a quick Google search for Danvers Cares will get you there.
All right, Lyle, nice seeing you.
Thank you so much.
All right, Lyle Herod with us from Danvers Care.
Okay, Bill, I think we're going to wrap it up. We've talked to just about everybody. Everybody was here, and I'll back out the video a little bit so you can just see that this event is ongoing. But it's almost about ready to end, and so, Bill, I'm going to just do an out with Josh. Okay. So, Josh, what would you say about this event here? I mean, it looks people are still milling about, and it looks like they're starting to collaborate now and to, what do you call the next hour, the 5 to 6 hour?
Well, the 5 to 6 hour is a networking.
Networking.
It's a social hour.
There
another,
you go.
Another forum might have been a happy hour, but it's it's similar to that.
Okay.
But and then they go into the dinner program. But I think it's very successful. I think it was a great idea by the district leadership to put something like this together. And it's, you know, this is a start, but all of the people that are feeding off of each other, there'll be a feeding process where all of the people from the Rotary Clubs will bring some of this stuff back to their communities. This is what's happening somewhere else. This is what could happen here. How can we model after what maybe Ipswich is doing versus Methuen and so forth. And it's a very positive program, and I think that it's going to, the fruits of the labor here will have long-term dividends.
I think we should mention also, once again, the involvement of Leahy in all of this.
Absolutely. They were a sponsor, a financial sponsor that helped make this program possible. And the money that they, their sponsorship is going to allow for some mini-grants for clubs to develop some programming to address different parts of this issue.
All right. Josh, thank you very much for inviting us.
Great.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming.
All right, that's Josh Arnold. On behalf of our producer and engineer, Bill Proposkin, of course, Bill Newell, who just did such a great job talking to everybody tonight and passing along this information, I want to thank the Rotary. I want to thank Leahy for inviting us here today to broadcast this program. This is MSO News Sports. On behalf of all those people, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.